Live from the Ghost Hunter Store, brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hey everybody, and that is a telephone you hear in the background, just like I just predicted.
Yes.
A weird sound's going to be coming over the air. Tonight we have a special guest, Jeff Ballinger. I would try to do an introduction for you, Jeff, but I think that would probably take up like the 60 minutes we have. So, I don't know, what do you like to be best known for?
I don't know. You know, paranormal guy. General, weird, odd kind of dude that just loves everything unexplained.
Because I know I first, I'm trying to think, had contact with you when you did the book, The Encyclopedia of Haunted Places.
Yeah, right, that was years ago, sure.
So I contributed something to that book. I thought
that's
that was
right.
Like a great idea that was like, you know, having all the different investigators put in their, you know, their version of their stories from haunted places. It was a pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
And Ghost Village, and I think I have a couple of your other books, too.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thanks for that. And, yeah, thanks for contributing, too. That was a cool idea. It was kind of neat to see, like, the paranormal community come together for something, you know, and because it's always had its drama, you know, still does. It's funny when people talk about it. I'm like, it's always been here. It always will be. You can kind of focus on it or just ignore it like I do and move on, you know?
Well, nowadays, I think it's, I mean, back then, that was a big deal, even more so than now.
Yeah,
I was getting people to try to work on one thing together.
But yeah.
It's getting better.
But, you know, I still have hope, you know? I mean, there's so many good people that I've met in doing this, and that it's become really easy to ignore the bad stuff, you know? Because there's so many great people that are working on awesome experiments and developing new equipment and researching places that have never been researched before, and that's really cool. To me, that's always what's excited me, not, you know, who's the member of what group and who's turf and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a cool field, and it's a cool time to be in it still. You know, it was cool then, even 5-10 years ago, as you know. But I still think it's cool, and that's what keeps me going.
I actually enjoy it more now because the less drama and more sharing of stuff. I mean, before, even 10 years ago, someone developed a new piece of equipment, they weren't going to share it with anybody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was like their secret little thing, and that was it. So it's nice to see. It's refreshing to see the new generations coming up and, you know, wanting to contribute and share everything.
Yeah, no, that is good, because, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, who knows? We, you know, no one has all the answers, and my God, at best I have two, and they're really not even interesting answers. You know, the basic stuff. It's funny, too, like, the longer you do this, I feel like I knew a lot more 10 years ago than I do now. I've steadily been losing knowledge.
We have to keep up with it. It's like, it changes every day, new equipment, you know, working here
at
the store, constant new stuff coming in, and you have to figure out how that one works now. Now, how does this one work, and what does this one do?
I think I question more and more each year. You know,
yeah.
All the stuff that I used to believe or used to think now doesn't sound like as solid,
right,
as it did then. You know, a lot more questions, but not many answers.
Yeah, but you know what? Too, like, I think what I've learned anyway is that it's such an individual kind of quest that we're all on. And so, really, I stopped years ago. I stopped trying to prove anything to anyone other than myself. And I'm just kind of learning on my own, and that's cool. That's okay. You know, I kind of made peace with that, and I'm happy to share information with anyone who, you know, is doing the same thing, and you know, and who wants to talk about it. I think the discussion is really, it's the best part, because, you know, remember, we've all remember the orb thing, and everybody was, you know, orbs are ghosts, orbs are not ghosts, and,
right.
And then I started to realize, man, it doesn't matter if they are or aren't, you know, it only matters what I believe, and, you know, all that stuff. I just think it's this really interesting quest that man has been on for many, many, many millennia, where you're trying to solve the big question, you know, is there life after death? Does something happen after we die? and you get out there to enough haunted places, you have enough experiences that you can't explain in any other way except to say, hey, that's a ghost. If it's not a ghost, I can't possibly explain how, you know, this event just occurred. When you go through that, you have to come to grips. Well, shoot, you know, something happens after we die. What am I going to do about that? How am I going to live my life? How am I going to, you know, explore my own spirituality? And that's really what it comes down to. I appreciate everyone who's trying to be scientific about this, and I gave up on that years ago, too. I just, I don't know if we're asking the questions the right way or not, but I just, I do appreciate how people are being methodical. And I think at the end of the day, they're trying to, you know, apply equipment and logic and reason to, at the end, is what actually is a spiritual question. You know, life after death, and then there's all kinds of other paranormal avenues too. You know, once you open the door, you know where do you draw the line? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. That's what kind of I think what I've gotten probably the most out of it over, you know, like 20 years or more. That I think it's the fact that I'm certain that there's life after death.
Yeah, you know, and isn't that cool? Here's the thing. That's big.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a huge
nothing
answer.
To scoff at. That's nothing to be like, oh, you know, that's as far as. I mean, that's huge. That's
no,
really, really huge.
I
know what
can
you
I
mean.
Want first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I warn people about that. It's like, you better hope I don't come back to haunt you. You're in trouble.
Yeah, right. We know all the tricks. No, that's cool.
Your latest book is Another Haunted Places.
Yeah, it's the revised edition of my first book, which came out in 2004, The World's Most Haunted Places. And I've basically had the chance to update it, add some new locations. It's funny how people, you know, some of the remarks I've gotten over the years, like, you know, boy, Amazon lets anyone review a book, you know, and some people said, oh, these are just places that all these ghost shows have done time and time again. And you scratch your head and you just want to say, you know, this book came out before any of those ghost shows were ever on the air.
Yeah.
I don't know who came first here, but I got a date on mine. So, you know, stuff like that's frustrating when people accuse you of just watching TV shows and regurgitating it into book form. And but also I found that people are really passionate about these locations. I mean, I got mail saying, how could you leave this place out? How could you, you know, not include this place or that place? And, you know, people care. The locations are the stars. You know, I've been to enough of them now where you realize, and I'm sure you see this too, where some people's dreams to go and investigate, you know, Alcatraz or go and investigate, you know, Waverly Hills or whatever. It's just the legend of these locations has grown to such proportions that it becomes a destination for people interested.
Yeah, everybody has like their top 10 list of places they want to visit.
So. I have my bucket list, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that cool? Yeah. Like that's and these places call to us and speak to us for different reasons. Maybe, you know, maybe we had a relative in Alcatraz. Maybe someone died of tuberculosis along the way in our family, or we knew someone at the location, or whatever. You know, it just something calls to us, and that's that intangible thing we can't measure. We can't you know, put it in a beaker and look at it. It's just your guts talking to you, and guts are a good thing to listen to, especially your own. You know, so. And Dave, I know, gosh, with your website and how many stories you've heard over the years and how many people have emailed you with haunts all over the place, some of them, you know, I get a lot too, and you read some of them and you're like, okay, you know, interesting, and you know, I don't want to say I've heard it all because I certainly haven't.
Right.
But some days it feels like it's close, you know, but every now and then you hear one and something inside you goes, well, wait a minute now, I would like to see this. I want to go there. I want to talk to this person. I want to, you know, investigate this. And it's rare, but when it happens, I listen to it. You know,
it's kind of like you get jaded over the years of because we deal with it so much. It takes like maybe a little more something a little more interesting to get your attention. But when it does, it definitely, you know, hooks you.
Yeah,
right. I guess like, you know, your BS meter gets honed, you know, after hearing a lot of things. And, and part of it, too, is just that, and it's, you know, some people just flat out lie to you, like, oh, there's blood dripping out of the walls and bed spinning around. And if that's true, like, I couldn't help you anyway. So, you know, I'm not going. But it's that believability that, you know, especially when someone starts off with, I don't want this published anywhere, I don't want to be on TV, I don't want to go public with this at all. I'm just dealing with something I don't understand. Oddly enough, that seems to get the most of my attention these days.
Right, because you know there's no other motivation outside of just wanting some answers.
Yeah, it wouldn't help.
Yeah, it's when people say, like, can you get me on Ghost Adventures? And when that's the opening, it's I'm pretty much, you know, the devil may live in your den, and I'm probably not going to hear it out, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, me and Marty work with South Jersey Ghost Research, and we do mostly private houses.
Right.
So we deal a lot with the people who, you know, they're not looking for anything, just they're looking for answers. So right. I think that's what keeps it interesting for me, probably the only reason why I'm still doing it, because there's no repeat, you know, performance. It's every case is different and everything's new. So
That is cool. And what's interesting, too, though, with the family cases, because they watch all the shows, sometimes they know what to say, you know, in those first phone calls. You know, they're using terminology that the TV shows use, and which means it's just another layer you have to look through.
I've have to be even more stringent with my training of my new people.
Yeah.
Because I got to make sure, there's people now, when I first started this, you know, I could have brought anything in and said this was equipment. The people in the house wouldn't know. But now people are familiar with not only the names of the equipment, they know how it works too.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're looking at, you know, us as the experts, you know, quote unquote, coming in to help them, and we don't, and say, ask a question about a piece of equipment and we can't answer it right, you know, our credibility goes right out the door, you know, instantly.
Yeah,
so
you lost it there.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, I actually, over the years, I use less and less equipment. I'm down to almost nothing because I'm not. I'm not knocking the equipment at all. It's just one direction you can go in ghost research, and it's just you know, I've sat vigils in front of EMF meters, and I'm just like, man, oh man, you know, so many things can set these things off. And I was in one ghost hunt. I'm not naming any names or locations, but it was really funny. We were up in this upper part of the building, and everybody's K2 meters were going crazy. And everybody's saying, all right, you got your cell phones off, right? And everybody's checking and double-checking, and they're going nuts. And, you know, people are talking, you know, getting responses. And went downstairs, and the person that, you know, worked at the building said, yeah, you know that flag on top of the building? That's actually a cell tower.
Oops.
So you go, oh.
Okay, turn that
well,
out.
Yeah,
that was all useless.
I had an experience similar to that, too, with we were close to an airport, though, literally across the street.
Yeah,
so,
sure, right.
So with all the two towers, every employee having radios, the police band, the fire band, all that stuff, all broadcasting right there. You know, the K2s really, you don't know what they're blinking at that point.
Mm. Oh, of course, yeah. You get every signal known to man, you know, going around an airport. It's funny too. Like I go on a lot of airplanes these days too, and every now and then I'll have one of my meters in my carry-on bag, just because, you know, if I'm not checking anything, and I always take it out and put it in the bin because I know it's going to look weird on the X-ray, and you know,
right.
You don't want to raise any suspicions when you're traveling. And I fly out of Providence, Rhode Island, which is where most of the ghost hunters crew flies out of, and it's pretty funny in that airport. Those guys are in there, you know, a lot more than I am, and I went through once with a Mel meter, and I put it out, put it next to it. It goes through the other side, and the TSA guy lifts it up, looks at me, and goes, "This yours?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Ghost hunter?" And I went, "Yeah." And he's just like, "Okay," throws it back in, and off we went. Like, that's awesome. That doesn't happen at other airports. At other airports, they take it out and they screen it for, you know, bombs and
exactly.
And
you'd be in the back room somewhere, being interrogated.
That's why. Yeah, I remember I went to Louisville, Kentucky, and I, same way coming back, I left it out, and the guy's like, "All right, this radiation detector, I'm gonna have to screen it," and he, you know, dusted it for everything. I'm like, "Yeah, go right ahead," you know. And but I just thought it was funny in Providence. They just knew exactly what it was and what it was for. And hey, all right, have a good day, you know.
That's, I'd be too afraid to even risk it bringing anything.
Yeah.
My luck, I would be the one that they're gonna be hardcore screening. Mm-hmm. So
thinking the publicity for your site, though, Dave. like, you know, Ghost That's Hunter arrested. Where is this ghost gear?
Any publicity is good publicity, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, dude, you could get on, you know, nightly news and stuff and just be like, hey, yeah, my website, ghosthunterstore.com, baby.
I'm going to start shipping you around the country.
Yeah, see, now you're giving me ideas. That's easy. That's pretty easy marketing there.
Yeah, nationwide. You know, do that next Halloween. Get yourself arrested at an airport. So, I don't want to give you, you know, I don't want to tell you how to market yourself or anything, but you know it's a good idea.
Yeah, I know it is. That's
that's the bad part.
That's how I'm filing it away, because that's too deviously good.
Take it. It's all yours.
So you do, like, I guess the background work for Ghost Adventures?
Yeah. And, I help them find locations, you know, do the research, give them, you know, the historical stuff, find the people that have had experiences. It's really everything I've been doing for my books for years, but for, you know, the medium of television. And it's been really cool. I've been with them since the first episode on the Travel Channel, and now we're just starting to film our sixth season, which is really cool, because back then it was just supposed to be 8 episodes, and that was it. So, you know, I help them find locations, help them get all the history down. The whole thing is prepping them, so when they get on the ground, they have all the data, know where the hot spots are and things like that. What I think is makes the show unique and is cool is that, you know, other shows and other people want to go and say, you know, try to determine if a place is haunted or not, which I think is kind of silly, because if you're even there in the first place, it's haunted. Now, there may not be any ghosts there, but it's haunted, right? Because it has a reputation, because people have had experiences, they've relayed those experiences, others found it believable enough to go there themselves, and so on. Legends take time and people to get born. Right. So I've always said, we don't go there if it isn't haunted. You know, if we don't have lots of reliable witnesses already who have determined this place is active, now, of course, sometimes you go places and you don't find anything. That happens all the time. But, you know, sometimes you do, and it's been a really cool gig. You know, aside from all the other stuff I'm doing, it's been fun to work with those guys and work in that medium too.
So I've never met them personally. I don't really. As weird as it sounds, I really don't watch the shows as much as probably I should, because that's where people come in all the time and are asking about the new piece of equipment that they just saw.
Yeah.
You know, especially on Ghost Adventures, because working with Gary Galka, I know he likes to test a lot of his stuff with Zach, and yeah, that's primarily when I watch it, if I have to go back and, you know, catch it a rerun, mm-hmm. to see what the new piece of equipment was. I guess you do it so much, it's like, you know, I don't know how many car mechanics would watch a show about, you know,
exactly.
Repairing a car. You know, so, but some of the stuff is interesting on TV. The only thing I don't like provoking, and that's everybody's into the provoking thing now.
Yeah, I know, I know. Yeah, no, and I get it.
It drives me nuts. My wife makes me turn the TV off, but, you know, she goes, you know, you got to watch my heart and my blood pressure and everything else. So
that's so funny. Yeah, no, I get it. I totally get it. Yeah, it's not really how I do it when I'm you know, doing an investigation. But at the same time, I understand energizing an environment. You know, you can do it, you know, people do it with EM pumps and right. other things like that, and some people, you know, try to stir the pot. And, you know, I don't know. I get both sides of it. I really do. And, you know, if it gets results, it gets results. What are you going to do?
Well, I try to explain to people, too. It's like if they were going to film a real show about ghost investigations...
Oh, yeah, no one would watch it.
No one would watch it at all.
It'd be terrible. Like, okay, coffee run. That would be the highlight.
It's like, it's going to be like 60 minutes of us sitting in the dark.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, really, it's not that exciting.
Walking around,
I mean,
saying flash.
You kind of have to do a little bit more to make it, you know, make it TV and make it entertainment, too.
Yeah. High drama when Dave spills the donuts and everyone's pissed at him.
Right.
Dude, that's all we had for the night. You dropped the donuts.
It was Grave Encounters. Have you? I don't know if you've seen the movie.
No, I haven't.
It's a knockoff of Ghost Adventures.
Oh,
people were telling me to watch it. It's like they go into a lockdown.
Yeah.
It's a small crew that goes in, but of course, you know, everything that could possibly go wrong goes wrong, and it it takes, like, you know, the typical B-movie, mm-hmm. straight to DVD twists. But
right.
It was entertaining, though, but it was like, very transparent on who they were trying to imitate. The lead guy is a big, bulky guy wearing, like, the black shirt, mm-hmm. the hair spiked up, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, it was like, and they called everything exactly the way the show does with the lockdown and everything else. So, I guess that's a form of flattery when they do stuff
like
that.
Yeah, of course,
it should be a compliment, you know? Yeah. Sure.
You know what else, too? Like, here's what, it's, I don't know how, you know, you guys feel, Dave and Marty, but over time, I've become so interested in every aspect of the paranormal. And by that, I don't just mean ghosts and monsters and aliens and all that. I'm interested in that, too. But I'm interested in the people, the fans, the shows, the way it's affected popular culture. It all fascinates me to no end. Because, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when I first started doing this, you couldn't just come out and say, hey, I'm a ghost hunter and I look for ghosts. You know, everybody, you'd be shunned.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And now, you get interviewed on your local newspaper.
Yeah.
And that's really, really interesting to me. It's interesting that, you know, it's this whole subculture of America that's you know, suddenly somewhat cool, thanks to the shows. I mean, you don't have to like the shows, and there's good points. You know, the good part about all these shows is that we're out of the closet, and it's okay to talk about it. And
that's what,
like,
I think.
You said the bad points.
The shows really made it, like, mainstream. They made it, people that first of all, when Tabs first came out with the, you know, with Ghost Hunters, they didn't realize there was normal people out there and teams going around doing investigating. You know, and each show after that has, you know, carved its own niche, but just backed up that original thing. These are regular people going out and doing this. You know, and you know, it was eye-opening to a lot of people that didn't. There's still people that don't realize there's even, like, local groups that do this.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. But it's opened up a lot of historic places, too, to get in and do work. Besides helping the private clients out, that they feel more comfortable, you know, calling somebody and saying, I have ghosts now, can you come help me? You got all these historic buildings that wouldn't let you in before or let you even near them, you know.
And now you can talk about it.
Right, right. Now they want you in
there. Yeah, it's true. It's totally true. And, you know, it's funny, too, because I still run into, especially, you know, working on Ghost Adventures and my books and stuff, I'm always talking to new haunted places. I'm always looking for the next great story. And, you know, some historic locations are just, oh, we don't talk about that. Yeah. Yes, we're aware people think we're haunted and there's no ghost here and, you know, we don't talk about that. And I've always said, you know, what a missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. Because if nothing else, ghosts can be a teaching tool. And a few years ago, I wrote a book called Who's Haunting the White House? I got into the White House, you know, the one in Washington, D.C., where the president lives. And it was incredible. I called them and I said, hey, I want to do a book about your ghosts. And they said, yeah, we're not interested. And I said, but I think it's an innovative way to teach history to kids. And the whole idea was for middle readers, you know, ages, you know, 9 to 13, 14. And, you know, because you can't know anything about a ghost unless you set the stage, unless you go back in time.
To who these people are, right.
Yeah, look at historically who was here and all of that stuff. And what a great learning tool. What a carrot to dangle. You know, this place may be haunted. And let me tell you by who. Let me tell you about Abe Lincoln. Let me tell you about John Adams and Abigail Adams and, you know, all of this stuff, this incredible story of America that's all encapsulated in that building, you know, there in Washington, D.C. And when I said that, they said, that's really interesting. All right, come on down. And I got to talk to the staff. I got to tour. I got to interview people that work there. And I was amazed. They were just so forthcoming. And these are the most reliable witnesses we have in America, because when you work in the White House, you're drug screened, psych screened, background checked, you know, regularly.
Very thoroughly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, you can't be around the president and foreign heads of state if you're, you know, with anything wrong with you. And so when these people say they've seen something, you know, hey, I believe them. And here's the other funny thing. They're really not fireable, is what I learned. Now, there's about 100 employees of the White House. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, which political party's in power. These people are the butlers, the cleaning crew, the cooks, the, you know, the people that run that museum / house / you know, building. And, I mean, of course, they're fireable, but it takes an awful lot. You know, these people, I met one guy, his father and his grandfather were both butlers at the White House. So, you know, that guy's going nowhere. You know?
He might be there after.
Yeah.
His father and grandmother might be there too.
I know. Yeah, I keep waiting
that's a cool twist on
the president to call, you know, and say, hey, you know, come on down, let's do an investigation. But so far that I haven't got that phone call yet. I'm still waiting now.
Hey, the way things are going now, the way things are opening up, you know, even around here, there was just recently a investigation of City Hall in Philadelphia
that
was sanctioned by, you know, the mayor and the council and everything, and that was an official investigation. I can't see that. 2 years ago, I can't see that happening.
No.
I was shocked, you know, to find out that it was even occurring, that and everyone gave like thumbs up, because, you know, I mean, years ago we tried to get into places, National Park Service or someone, somewhere, politician somewhere has to sign off for it, and they think that that's going to come back to haunt them when they're, you know, literally haunt them when they're, you know, running for higher office, that they acknowledge that, you know, ghosts may exist by letting these ghost hunters in. But like, I think
the
shows have helped with that tremendously.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what's cool, man? A few more years, we're going to be like a maybe we're going to be like a special interest group that the politicians will court. Can you imagine, like someone running for, you know, senator, governor, just being like, "Yes, I'm looking for the ghost investigator support." You know, because you're right. I mean, a politician isn't going to do anything that they think could hurt their chances.
Right.
Something like that, they figure is going to have some kind of mass appeal that they'll be able to explain and turn in their favor. Like, hey, it doesn't matter if I believe in ghosts or not. Some people do, and they're interested in this building and the research, and, you know, why should we deny them? You know, that's a very forward-thinking kind of thing to say, and, you know, who knows.
They've already had impact in Gettysburg, getting the they were going to close the park hours completely,
mm-hmm.
Past a certain time, but, you know, some politicians and the public, you know, because that's a huge market for them there, swayed the, you know, the federal government to, you know, come to a compromise and leave the park open late, you know, past dark, 6 months out of the year, as opposed to, you know, blocking it off the entire year. So, I mean, that was like a huge, you know, I guess like stepping stone for ghost hunters right there,
mm-hmm.
affecting public policy.
I've watched the Gettysburg thing, you know, for a while, because I've got friends there, you know, Mark Nesbitt and people like that, and there's an ebb and flow with whoever's running the Park Service at the time, and I know at least a year ago the person running the whole thing was very adverse to people coming there for a ghost investigation, and that's fine. I understand that this subject offends some people's sensibilities. I know none of us mean to do that. It's just some people say, I don't believe in ghosts, therefore there can be none, and you coming here to look for them offends me. You know, but the reality is, anyone I've ever met in Gettysburg, and I've been there a bunch now, as I'm sure you have, you live closer than I do, you know, anyone I've ever met there in the ghostly realm, people looking for ghosts, have been nothing but respectful. If anything, maybe a little more respectful.
I was just
going to
say
understand.
That.
Sure, yeah.
I think we're definitely more respectful in the sense, because I think people, especially the people who are very serious about it, we understand it, or our point of view about the spirits is, I guess, more in depth, and we see them as people.
Well, we have to go over above, you know, the normal person to make it right, too, because we already have a bad name, so we have to get that good name out there.
Right, so you're going to be more watching our P's and Q's even more. But it's like, I saw a great shirt years ago. It's like, you know, it was a line of tombstones, and it said, "We are history."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
that's right.
That's one of the things that I think keeps me interested, too. That's what we do for fun when we're not doing the private houses. We'll go to you know, the historic places, and that's like our relaxation, because we get the, and I like the story of the history mixed with the ghost investigation. That makes it, you know, fulfilling, you know, and very interesting.
Yeah,
it's a huge part of it, and I got into kind of an argument pretty recently with a historian who was just, you know, again, offended by the notion of ghosts, and I said, you know what, man, history is nothing but a ghost story. You don't know for certain what happened. You know, more recent history, we've got really good guesses, because maybe it was chronicled with a video camera or whatever. And, you know, But the Revolutionary War, okay, we know who won, right? But you don't know every detail of that. We just know what the winners told us.
Exactly. Right.
You know, the rest is just speculation. It's a ghost story. It's a legend. It's a tale. You know, there's no way to verify. And the thing about ghosts, and this is what's great. Someone I interviewed once, a historical reenactor, a Civil War reenactor. These guys have ghost experiences, by the way. Man, if you ever want to stereotype a group, those folks go out there and they have a lot of experiences. And I remember him telling me, he said, you know, when you hear the numbers of Gettysburg, you know, where you've got tens of thousands dead, wounded, or missing in the course of 3 days. Those numbers are cold. They have no meaning. They're just numbers. If I said, you know, 51,000, you know, whatever, it's just a number. But if you take an individual story, if you talk about, you know, a guy with a name who had a family and was from somewhere and who's stuck, maybe still bound by duty, or maybe it's something residual just replaying. Either way, you suddenly humanize. You just got to humanize one, just one of those people. And that place now has so much more impact than it ever did before, because numbers mean nothing. They're cold. They're just data. But stories suddenly give you an emotional tie, and that's what's fascinated me most always about the ghost experience is the story. The you know, that thing that's the person's best recollection of what happened. And as you know, the further removed you get from that original person, of course, the story starts to evolve and change. And you know, and it can go in different directions, but somewhere in there is a nugget, you know, of reality, of truth. And that's, we were saying earlier, when you hear that nugget, when you hear that truth and you say, I want to know more, you know, that's what stirs us. And of course, I always want to get to the source if I can, the person that says, I saw the thing, not, you know, my friend's cousin's brother swears,
right?
You know, those Woodrow Hahn. I want to always get to the person that said, I had this experience, because that's just the most interesting.
And you can tell when, just by the way they're relaying the stories, the
sure.
people that really had the experience.
See the passion in their voice. Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
We talked to, you know, we interview tons of people throughout the course of a year, and it's very easy to spot someone that's trying to, you know, fabricate a story or embellish it, because that there's a certain, I guess it's like a passion. You're trying to relate an experience that's almost unrelatable to somebody else, and there's
when they say they can't describe, they really can't describe it to you, then you know that they saw it.
Right. Because some things are just hard to, you know, to get someone else's perception of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's really, it's interesting. All of it is. And I think that, you know, the more we keep talking about it, that's where you start to get somewhere. Because ghosts are also a way for living people to connect with each other. You know, oral tradition, folklore, legend, all that stuff is still alive and well today, even in the realm of the internet age and Twitter and Facebook and, you know, texting and all that other stuff. We still share these stories. It's a bonding thing because though we do talk, you know, we can be more open about it now than we used to be, it's still something that you really only share with someone that you trust. You know, you don't just come out and tell a stranger generally. You know, that you just had this really profound spiritual experience. You in sharing that, you're saying to someone, I trust you. I trust
right.
you not to mock me or make fun of me. And when you're on the receiving end of that as an investigator, especially in people's homes, you know, they want to know they can trust you, that you're not going to make fun of them and, you know, and things like that. And so it's allowed, the ghost experience is so big, you know, it touches on so many things. It's not science, though maybe that's a little bit of a part of it. It's spirituality, it's psychology, it's history, it's religion, it's legend, it's folklore, it's sociology, it's all of that stuff combined. And that's what just gets me so intrigued by this topic and why I can't stop thinking about it. Every part of it, you know, why does this person choose to share this story? Why does this location have an entire website for their ghost tours? And almost to the, you know, point of ignoring everything else that they used to do, you know, be a hotel or a restaurant or a bar or whatever.
Right.
You know, like all of it is just amazing to me. And I love it. I like I said, more questions than answers, but it sure is fun to think about.
All right. I got a question for you here.
Okay.
Legend tripping. What is legend
yes.
tripping?
Legend tripping is looking for ghosts on acid. All right. Totally kidding.
That's my fault.
So we can try that.
It's awesome. No, I'm kidding. It's legend tripping is a term that's been around for decades, and it's a term I stole last year with no apology. Legend tripping used to mean, it was kind of a colloquial term for academic folklorists who talked about teenage rite of passage stuff. So, you know, you're 12 years old at a sleepover, you sneak out of the house, you sneak into the graveyard, you're trespassing, and you knock three times on that cursed headstone that supposedly the witch is going to jump out of if you do it. That's the traditional definition.
Right.
And I love the term, and I love the idea because, you know, I thought about this. You know, I heard someone saying, someone was speaking on the paranormal once, and they were, you know, making fun of people that are thrill seekers in the paranormal. And I remember thinking, man, I find it thrilling. If I didn't, I wouldn't do it. And you know what? I don't think I'm sorry for it either. You know, I do find this thrilling. I am a thrill seeker. I want to find the next thrilling investigation. Absolutely. No apologies. And so the idea of legend tripping was to say, let's get back to the story. You know, every ghost show, every paranormal show, not even ghost show, every paranormal show you've ever seen is legend tripping first. It's there. They're in a location because they heard a story, because they heard a legend. Could be a new legend, could be an old legend. And it's something inside of them or inside of their producers or whatever rang true enough that they were going to go through the trouble of putting themselves there. So legend tripping is about putting yourself into the story. You know, it's about going to the Queen Mary because you heard it was haunted. And you may go down to the lower decks and into the cargo hold and into the boiler room, and you may come back and go, you know what, it's just an old creaky ship. I don't think it's haunted at all. And you're still a part of the story. Or you may have an experience and add a new chapter to it. It's about, having the joy of it again, finding that childlike wonder. When I hear that there's a monster in the woods somewhere, I want to go there. I want to stand where it supposedly stood, see what I see, feel what I feel. Maybe I'll see something. Maybe I won't. But that's what it's about, you know, getting the actual experience. And that's something that's called to us for as long as there have been legends. You know, when people talked of dragons and sea monsters and all that other stuff, and you know, part of it is saying, "Well, I'll face it. I'll go there." You know, I will face down the legend. And so legend tripping is just kind of a return to what's old.
That's why when I do lectures, I explain to people that we're the people that we hear the noise. And we are, you know, the odd noise or something behind the door, and we're the ones that run towards it instead of run away, you know?
We're the ones in the movie that are yelling at, don't do it!
You don't open that door. It is, no matter what your motivation for doing it, there is that part of it that's...
Sure,
that rush. An adventure, and an adrenaline rush. Yeah, yeah. And
absolutely.
You're doing that.
And you don't have to jump out of a plane to do it, you know?
It's unavoidable.
Of course. Why wouldn't you? You know, like why wouldn't you do it? You know, if you don't find it interesting, thrilling, and fascinating, what are you doing? You know, go find another hobby or another you know another thing to look into.
It's definitely an aspect of it. I probably have classified people as thrill seekers, and and probably in a more derogatory tone too. You know, but to me, they're the people that are out there that are the ones that usually go through and they vandalize or they're going into the
trespassing the
abandoned buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah,
giving us the bad name.
Right.
You know, not necessarily that, like, you know, having the, you know, that rush or that, you know, because I mean that's when we go to the historic places. Like we went to Lizzie Borden a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was our weekend away from ghost hunting, was to go ghost hunt at Lizzie Borden. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, but that's what we were there for. We were there for the thrill of being in that location with all the history there. I mean, that was more of the rush than anything that could have happened paranormal wise.
Mm-hmm.
It was being in that building with all the history there.
No, the place is legendary. Yeah, I only live about an hour from the Lizzie Borden House. I've been there a bunch, and it's cool when you and I'm friendly with the owner, and I've had the opportunity to do all kinds of things there, and that's cool. You know, like I've always told paranormal investigators, I'm like, you know, look, investigating 100 places once is interesting and cool, but investigating one place 100 times, that's when you're going to start to really know the building, and your results will mean more mm-hmm. because you know, oh, you know what, that third stair is creaky, you know, or the water pipes run in this wall and they always kick in the winter. And
it's that intimate knowledge of the building itself that, you know, a novice wouldn't know.
Right, yeah, you couldn't. You need to spend some time, and that's there's no substitute for time. But, yeah, no, and as far as, like, the people that are trespassing and breaking stuff, the one reason, and most compelling reason I can give not to do that is you can get more places if you don't. You know, you can do more of it by doing the right thing. And sometimes people are blown away when you ask for permission. For, you know, everyone else is trespassing into a location, and you find a security guard and say, hey, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what interests me. Could I go in with your permission? Sometimes people are so taken aback that they, well, yeah, okay, I'll go with you. Great, you know, let's go.
That's why I tell people all the time when people are starting this, you know, don't be afraid to ask. The worst thing they can say is no.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Ask,
And there's lots of historic places. Every town has their local legends and lore. We're not going to run out of places to investigate. You know, just go and ask. It can't hurt.
Yeah, that's so true. And also, I mean, it helps too, like, you know, now that I've written a bunch of books and work on different projects, you know, that opens doors too, because it's kind of proof that I take this seriously. I'm not just, you know, some stranger passing through. And, you know, if you have a reason, you know, and keep in mind, when I first started this, my only reason was my website, you know, Ghost Village, back in 1999. I was just saying, look, I'm writing articles for this website called Ghost Village, which I owned, and back then was pretty small. You know, it was just a couple of pages and, you know, places I was writing articles on, and that still opened doors. People said, okay, well, you know, you're some kind of journalist, even if it's on the web, and back then the web was still pretty young. You know, and have a reason, you know, because otherwise, what are you doing? You know,
exactly. Now, you do events, too, don't you, out of Lizzie Borden? I thought I saw something coming up.
Yeah. I do probably about two events a year at Lizzie Borden. We've got something, a Dead of Winter event. It's actually completely sold out, so otherwise I would plug it shamelessly. We did that last year, too. It's just fun. We go there. We get dinner for everybody. We do a couple of talks. Everybody gets a historic tour of the building from one of the tour guides, and then, you know, we go lights out and investigate it. And the nice thing, you've been there, it's not that big. Fire code limits you to 25 people inside. So the events are always small, and we divide everybody into four groups, and then we just move them between floors. You know, you've got the main floor, the second floor, the third floor, and the basement. So we get to, everybody gets to really get to know that building. Unlike, you know, I also do events at places like Stanley Hotel in Colorado and Waverly Hills and you know, Eastern State Penitentiary. Those places are so huge, you sometimes can't even see it all in one night, you know, during an organized event. But Lizzie Borden, it's pretty cool. You can, you know, you can get into all the nooks and crannies in just a few hours.
Yeah, we had a good time. I think it was 20 of us that went up.
Yeah, it was a good time.
So it was like
one of them.
It was pretty active that night, too.
Yeah, we had some interesting things happen, mm-hmm.
So you guys have been in that house. And for people who don't know, it's bigger than my house, but it's not a huge mansion or anything. It's a large house. Now, this is what always gets me when I start thinking about it, and if you start reading the court transcripts and things like that. If you're on the third floor and someone is one floor below you getting axed to death, you know,
how do you
didn't have your iPod on, you're going to hear it,
yeah.
You know? Like, that's the thing. You're going to hear someone getting axed to death. You're going to hear thumps and bangs and all that stuff. So
walking around, we heard the voices. You know, you heard the other investigators on the other floors and everything. And how that got through was...
Yeah, I was doing more than looking for ghosts. I was thinking of what I know of the murders and the stuff and trying to walk, you know, through the rooms mm-hmm. and figure out, okay, this is how they would have to come in. This is how they would have had to get out. You know, all different things like that. And that, you know, actually I added more, you know, excitement to the night.
More intrigue to it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. Here's the thing about a big part about the Lizzie Borden house. It's an unsolved murder. And we hate that as a society, you know, in general. it, had that murder been solved, had Lizzie been convicted and you know, whatever, hanged or jailed for life or whatever back then, or someone else, even if it's not Lizzie, I don't think we'd still talk about that case. We would have forgotten about it. And think of the other famous axe murder house in the United States, right? Villisca in Iowa. Again, a brutal murder, a horrible murder. Children killed, too, at this time. And it's unsolved. It's unsolved, and that irks us. Even though it's been a century, you know, it irks us. Who did this? Can I figure it out through an EVP, even for my own satisfaction? Yes. Even though now we know whoever did it is long dead from natural causes or other. It just bothers us, and it's such a big part of the legend, you know, that we don't have that closure of knowing who did it.
I think that was one of the tantalizing things, too, the possibility.
That somebody may say, I did it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, an afterlife confession of the murder.
Right. So,
you know, that would be, I guess that'd be a nice little coup for any ghost hunter.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody's going in that house looking for, that one EVP that says, Lizzie did it, you know, so they could play it to the world.
I'm an armchair, you know, quarterback on this, like everybody else is, and I tend to think it was Lizzie, but I kind of don't think she acted alone. Or if nothing else, Bridget the maid, or possibly, you know, another relative, was aware she was going to do it. Maybe even aware she was doing it at the time.
And just turned a blind eye to it, or.
No, I think there was even cleaning up.
Assistant, yeah.
So there was two people, at least, I think, involved in cleaning up the mess and getting rid of the stuff.
There had to be. Somebody else had to know what was going on and helped out.
Whether they found out after the murder or before, they knew beforehand. But, yeah, because I mean, exactly, the armchair quarterbacking of
the very cold case.
See, now I have to go back and ask more.
That's the thing about paranormal investigation, right? We're trying to get our hands on history. We're trying to look at the dents and dings that have been made on our planet, you know, and an unsolved murder, double murder here, or a battle there, or just a unexplained activity here. We're trying to get really close to these things and go in reverse, go back in time, mm-hmm. and figure out why would something be here? What would their motivation be? You know, what could be keeping someone in this location? And that's all we can do. And the speculation is so fascinating. And then when the data lines up with history, oh, that's just amazing. You know, when you've got, you know, video or witnesses who see an apparition that they can match up to photos. Like, you know, this person lived here 50 years ago, mm-hmm. and here's the photo. Here's what they looked like. And you go, wow, that's a match. Or you've got names that come out in electronic voice phenomena that line up with people that live there. You start to go, whoa, you know, that's just not some radio wave floating around.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, do you go on any of the actual locations when they're shooting for Ghost Adventures?
Once in a while. For the most part, it's, you know, I may have been there before, or it's just, you know, from a distance research where we're looking for places that meet a bunch of different criteria. And the criteria could be geographically we want to be somewhere specific right now, or, you know, gee, we've just done a bunch of hospitals, so now let's look more at a, like a prison or something, or a hotel or a restaurant. But yeah, once in a while I go there, and I've been on a few episodes. I was on the Lizzie Borden episode we filmed earlier this summer, so once in a while I pop in.
There was the one question or place I wanted to ask you about, it was Pennhurst.
Oh my God, I've been there. I was there for a show called Paranormal Challenge, which I also worked on for the Travel Channel. And that place is amazing. I'm sorry, what was your question, though?
Your take on it. We were scheduled to go before, I guess it was before Taps was going out there.
Yeah.
So it was before, mm-hmm. I think it was after, yeah, it was after Ghost Adventures had done it.
Yep.
Because we actually watched, to prep the team, we actually watched the episode because of the history that Zach gives in the very beginning of it is very in-depth and probably the best detailed history of the place, and like you could get it in a short format like that.
Right.
And
Thank you. That was my part.
So it's like, you know, to prepare, because a lot of the people in the group never heard of it. You know, you had to be of a certain age and, you know, live in the area at the time to remember that. And the night we were supposed to go, it was like the low for the night was 100 degrees. That was as cool as it was going to get.
Oof.
And so we're going to have to wear the masks in part of the buildings because some of them we were going in weren't cleaned out completely yet.
Yeah, there's still the asbestos.
So it was, you know, we had to bail and we haven't ever been able to reschedule. So it's like I've always, you know, wondered what would it been like.
What did we miss?
Yeah, what the exactly? What
did okay, let me make it worse for you.
Thanks.
That place when I worked on that Ghost Adventures episode, that episode of all the ones I've worked on, and I think I've done 68 now, 67 or 68 episodes. That one is probably my top one, in that I'm really proud of what we did there because I'm proud we got to go and talk about this incredible, awful travesty that took place in this location not that long ago. I was still alive. I was a little tyke, but I was alive when that happened. And you realize how horrible these human beings were treated inside this location. If you bit someone twice, and keep in mind, these are all mentally challenged and disturbed people who aren't, you know, their families weren't capable of taking care of them. They needed an institution.
Right.
And if you bit someone twice, your teeth were removed. You know, decades earlier, you were lobotomized just because you were hard to deal with. And they didn't want to deal with you, and then they didn't have medicines. Even worse, someone was describing how you'd have 100 beds with people who are so profoundly retarded they can't even get up to use the bathroom, and two people to just change adult diapers, and some of these people would just rub feces on them and in their hair, not because they don't know any better, because they knew that they would get physical attention, that they would get touched because they need to be bathed. And I still get choked up when I think about that. Human beings that just, all they get, the only touch they get per day is a diaper change.
And we're not talking like ancient history, you know?
No, it was the 1970s.
That's what people don't realize, that this was going on, not like in the backwoods either. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was
right outside
the huge hospital complex.
Not a second world country, no.
Right. Mm-mm.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And the more you learn, and I got to, I mean, I interviewed, former patients there where she just talked about, you know, they would hit her and this and that. And you just go, these are human beings, people, humans, you know, that you just, someone's children, someone's, you know, brothers and sisters and cousins and nieces and nephews. And oh my God. And I just, I'm very proud of the way that we set the stage there and talked about it, and we got the Bill Baldini, the guy that first broke that story for, I think it was ABC back in the 70s. We got him back to talk about it, and it's important that we remind ourselves once in a while, and if a ghost story can do that, remind us of how cruel we can be, how negligent, and this is society, by the way. I'm not talking about, you know, there was a few bad people who worked there, but for the most part, it was people just trying their best with, you know, too little resources. And I was just, oh, gosh, that place. So when I went there, I remember being down in one of the tunnels, and I was there for minutes, and we went right down in the tunnels. And I was there with Zach and a couple other people, just a quick walkthrough in the afternoon. Rush of cold air was by us, and here's, you know, this noise just 20 feet in, and just went, oh, my God, how long have we been here? Minutes, you know, and that place is... I like to say it's not just haunted, it's haunting. You know the past, you know the history that took place there, and you walk around and that human trauma is soaked into the walls and bricks. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you can get back there, you should do it. It's important.
Yeah, there's certain places that I think just I know, like Eastern State Penn's one for me too. Knowing the discipline, you know, that was put on some of the inmates there. Everyone was pretty much solitary confinement. You couldn't talk. They'd use the gag bar, mm-hmm. you know, if you were caught talking, and a whole bunch of other things that went on. You know, that you feel that in the walls. Forget the ghost stuff and everything else. All that kind of energy is just oozes out of places like that.
Right.
You know,
no,
it's yeah, the haunting is just something else on top of all that. That's like a whole other thing you have to deal with. I've been out to Eastern State quite a few times, and I still, every time I've been out there, I've never been able just to shake that feeling of just that.
Yeah, no, yeah. Eastern State's something, and, you know, boy, the way sound travels through there and all that other stuff, it's... I'm psychic as a fence post, and I remember walking through one of the wings off the middle rotunda there, and just being, you know, I've been in creepy dark places for years, and I'm actually quite comfortable most of the time, and just remember walking and all of a sudden going, whoa, I'm scared. You know, yeah. I'm actually scared right now, and I can't figure out why. I guess I'm just going to keep walking, though, because I'm not going to ignore that feeling. And it was only in one of the fingers there off the rotunda. I could walk through it again. I just don't remember what it was called. Interesting place.
Yeah, it's one of the places I think that I'll never forget. The, like, details, intimate, like, small, tiny details of different rooms and stuff really still seem as vivid as the day I was there. It's a very cool place to check out.
The energy stays with you, too. For, you know, it's one of those places where it stays with you for a few days.
Yeah. Some places do that. Isn't that interesting? Where, you know, just you don't stop thinking about it. And yeah, prisons are, boy, Mansfield, Ohio State Reformatory is another one for me. That's, you know, I've been to a number of times. I'm going there again in March, and that place is just active throughout. You know, you walk around, and you just feel it in the air. You know, it's like that electric charge that's just hovering around you. You know, some of these places, and to me, the locations like that are just thrilling to be inside. Just, you know, I'm awake. I don't need coffee. I don't need caffeine. You know, just put me in there, and I'm ready to go. Yeah.
Well, Jeff, we're just running out of time now, so I wanted to thank you for coming on.
Yes, thank you very much.
I mean, we were on the air the whole time. I thought we were just talking. That's
right. Getting ready for the show now.
That's so weird. Right.
So we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And I guess JeffBallinger.com and Ghost Village, right?
GhostVillage.com. You can find me there, and you know, that's probably easier for people to spell.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks for talking to us tonight.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thanks, Dave and Marty. Appreciate it.
All right, take it easy.
Take care.
Good night.
All right, everybody, that's it for tonight. We will see you again in 1 week.